Hello, I'm Bilal Butt. This is number 0217, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0217. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Mark Abrams from the Annals of Improbable Research is back to talk about this year's edition of the Ig Nobel Awards.
We gave the medicine prize this year to a team from Japan and China. They did some experiments and found that listening to opera music can improve the life prospects of heart transplant patients who are mice. They also played other kinds of music for heart transplant patients who are mice, and they discovered that playing music by Enya probably will shorten their lives rather than lengthen them.
Leland Gregory is the author of 50 Shades of Dumb, true stories of strange and screwy sex.
There was a disturbance call to the local police that there was a man in the pumpkin field, how should we say this, carving a pumpkin in a very unique way, making his own jack-o'-lantern, if you will. So the police found him, you know, basically with his pants down and arrested him. And my joke at the end was the guy looked up and looked at the officer and said, "What is it, midnight already?"
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge.
Somebody has filed a lawsuit against the Metropolitan Museum of Art, saying that they shouldn't be charging people to go there. Well, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is kind of run by a bunch of snobs, said, "Oh, no, we have permission from the city of New York to charge." And the judge, who must be one of the more brighter judges, said, "Oh, yeah, let me see the document." Well, that was, I think, about 3 months ago. They're still looking for the document. They can't find it.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0217, was Bilal Butt, who does Afternoon Drive on Montreal's Shoum 97.7. He's also a musician, and he has a new video out called Why You So Rude. You can find it on his website, by the way, at BilalButt.com, and Bilal is giving away his music for free. You can download it from his site, and you'll find links to his site from my site here at TheStuffFile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which, as Bilal said, was show number 0217, and you'll find the links to Bilal's site, and you can listen to his music. You can download it for free, and it's some pretty good stuff, too. Check it out. And thank you very much, Bilal, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, Yale University police are investigating a series of laundry tampering incidents carried out by a suspect that they've dubbed the poopetrator at the Connecticut school. Now, students using the school's Saybrook College laundry room reported their clothes were soiled with urine, food waste, and feces in a series of September incidents. And Saybrook Master Paul Hudak said Yale police have opened an official investigation. "We have asked our students not to leave their laundry unattended. The affected machines have been thoroughly disinfected, and we are actively seeking information about who the perpetrator might be," Hudak said. "That's about all we can do." The culprit, or culprits, were dubbed the poopetrator by students after Lucy Fleming's clothes were soiled by what appeared to be human excrement while in the laundry room's dryer on September the 7th. Incidents involving urine and food waste were reported the previous day. A further incident was reported September 26th. "The fact that this could happen at Yale is shocking to me," Fleming said. "Think about what this means for our community." Really? Someone's putting feces on your clothes and your only response is, "Think about what this means to our community?" What, your good standing, your name, how this affects everyone else in the school that you go to? You know, it never ceases to amaze me how people of a certain stature, and yes, that would be the folks at Yale, seem to think that depravity is something that is non-existent among those of higher learning. Au contraire. Sometimes it takes a learned mind to be really twisted. I mean, Quite frankly, people with less education usually have better things to think about or more pressing economic concerns. They don't have time to sit around with Muffy old Chad thinking up elaborate scatological pranks. But I digress. Not that I'm talking light of this situation, because I can imagine what it must be like to have your clothes soiled after you're trying to clean them. But still, to say that it affects the entire community because your clothes got dirty by someone who threw feces on it, it doesn't necessarily speak towards the whole school. It speaks toward one mind. That's it. Just one mind. Get over yourself. Anyway, in a case that would not have been a mystery to anyone who has seen the movie Old School, a man in Texas apparently wanted to party with his friend so bad that he staged his own kidnapping so his wife wouldn't give him a hard time about leaving the house. According to police, Rogelio Antaverdi, age 34, of Edinburgh, which is in the Texas-Mexico border region, was with his wife at home when two masked men barged into their house carrying guns. They forced him from his home, and his hysterical wife called police in a panic. Dozens of law enforcement officers fanned out to search for the guy. A police helicopter was even sent out to look for him, but the investigation was going nowhere, and police officers started to become suspicious. Antaverde thought he had outsmarted everyone. He casually returned home and said the kidnappers showed mercy and had set him free. But he later confessed to investigators that it was all a ruse so that he could go out for a night on the town with his drinking buddies. Antaverde was charged with making a false police report, and he was released on $5,000 bail. Wow. If his wife is really that much of a ball breaker, then being released on bail back to her might be the equivalent of a death sentence. You also have to wonder how long they spent hatching up this plot. I know that they were his drinking buddies, but I seriously believe they had to be drunk already to dream this one up. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Michigan woman who passed off two cans of spaghetti sauce as an explosive device during a bank robbery pleaded guilty to the crime. Ophelia Neal, age 53, pleaded guilty in Oakland County Circuit Court to bank robbery and explosive charges following the April 6th crime in Macomb County. Neal pleaded guilty in Oakland County because she had been wanted there for violating her parole. Okay, let's pause here for a second. How do you plead guilty to explosive charges when you're only carrying two cans of spaghetti sauce? I'm guessing that there wasn't a lawyer present here, or at least a good one. Anyway, getting back to the story. Police said Neal went to the Fifth Third Bank in Clinton Township on April 6th and told the clerk that she was carrying a bomb in her cloth bag. Neal fled with an undisclosed amount of cash in a car driven by a man. She was later arrested and police discovered her cloth bag contained two cans of spaghetti sauce. Neal, who has previous convictions for fraud, marijuana possession, and assault, is scheduled to be sentenced November the 9th. Again, pleading guilty to explosive charges with two cans of spaghetti sauce? I just don't get it. Two cans of baked beans, now that's another story. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? It's amazing how fast a year goes by. Here we are again talking about the annual Ig Nobel Awards. Each year we chat with Mark Abrams from the Annals of Improbable Research, who put on the event. So, who are the big winners this year? Time to find out. Mark is with us via Skype to Skype Communications from Massachusetts. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Always great to have you on the program once again. This year, a whole bunch of new awards, and they're always ones, of course, that make me think, really? It's like, what is one-armed applause?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Well, it has to do with this year's Ig Nobel Peace Prize, which was awarded to Alexander Lukashenko, the president of the country of Belarus, and to one of the police organizations in that country. Mr. Lukashenko made it illegal for anybody in his country to applaud. You cannot clap your hands in public or else you're violating the law. One of the police organizations in that country arrested a one-armed man for clapping, and they convicted him.
Okay. And you gave them the Peace Prize?
What else? What other prize would you give them?
Now, I know that in a lot of cases, people who win Ig Nobel Prizes show up for the award ceremony. I'm assuming he did not.
Most of the winners do come. We had, I think, 7 or 8 of the 10 this year come. We tried to get in touch with him. We couldn't do it.
So he has no idea that he's won this award?
Oh, I have no idea what's going through his head.
So let's talk about some of the ones that actually did show up. Who are some of the big winners this year?
Well, they're all big. So we gave the medicine prize this year to a team from Japan and China. They did some experiments and found that listening to opera music can improve the life prospects of heart transplant patients who are mice.
Mice.
Mice, yeah. They also played other kinds of music for heart transplant patients who were mice, and they discovered that playing music by Enya probably will shorten their lives rather than lengthen them.
I would assume playing music by Enya will cause people to take their own lives, never mind shorten them.
That's a different experiment, and I would ask that you do not conduct it, please.
Okay. I will not. Now, people can go online, by the way, and actually see the full awards. It's on YouTube now, right? Correct?
Yep. They can just go to our website at improbable.com. You can see details about the winners, and you can see video of the ceremony with almost all the winners there getting their prizes from a bunch of Nobel Prize winners who, as usual, showed up to hand out the prizes.
Now, for those who are going to take a look at the ceremony, one of the things I noticed is everyone started by shooting paper airplanes.
Yeah, that's an old tradition. This was the 23rd year for the ceremony, and it was pretty sure that just the second year, way, way back when, that the audience on their own started what became a tradition, where a lot of them come to the theater loaded up with arms full of paper, and they spend the night making paper airplanes and throwing them at the stage.
Now, you know, we unfortunately live these days in almost a nanny state. Has no one ever been concerned, you know, someone might get an eye poked out with an airplane?
Oh, yeah, we've had people ask about that, but then they usually start laughing halfway through their own question. And at the beginning of the ceremony, we do ask people to be very careful and to have safety in mind, to behave themselves a little bit.
The award winners come from near and far for these awards, some of them traveling from the other side of the globe, yet when they get up on stage, they only get a minute?
You've been through many public ceremonies, I'm sure, and so has probably everybody listening. And you know what it's like when there are a whole bunch of people who are going to give short speeches. All of their speeches end up being not so short. So, yeah, we limit everybody to about 1 minute, and I think you know the way we do that. The winners are always at the mercy of a cute little 8-year-old girl who sits up there on the stage, and whenever she feels somebody's talked long enough, she walks across the stage, goes up to that person and says, "Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored." And she doesn't stop until they do. It works.
Oh, I like that. Okay, so let's talk about some of the other awards that you've given out this year. You mentioned the Peace Prize.
Psychology Prize this year went to a team from several countries, several European countries, and also the USA, for an experiment they did showing that people who think they're drunk also think that they are attractive.
Hmm.
They conducted this research at a bar in France.
Now, how much research goes into that? And the reason why I ask is an eye test given before they start drinking?
Because they published a study with all the details, and they went to a lot of trouble on this. It would take a while to explain, but the questions you're asking and the ones that I'm sure are forming in your head lined up behind those questions are all questions they thought pretty hard about. So they tried to make sure that they were taking account of those things.
And I guess that's one of the reasons they win awards, because these people are thorough researchers.
In most cases.
In most cases.
Well, it's the prizes don't necessarily go to scientists. and they don't necessarily go to professionals. You can win an Ig Nobel Prize for anything. The only rule is you have done something that makes people laugh and then think.
Okay. So what's the physics prize for this year? Because I understand it has to do with a pond.
The physics prize went to another international team based mostly in Italy, who showed that it's possible for many people to run across the surface of a pond if those people and that pond are on the moon. What they discovered was if you had if gravity were a lot less powerful than it is, then people could walk, well, not walk, but you could run across the surface of water. You know, on the Earth, there are very few creatures that can. There are a few birds and some lizards and some insects that manage to run across water, but not very many.
Okay. And do you know if these people get research grants for doing this?
You know, that's not really important to us how they get their funding, but an awful lot of them, I mean, people often ask that question, assuming, oh, it's all government money, they're stealing the money from us or something. And an awful lot of these are things people funded completely on their own. So that particular one, I don't know. There are films of them doing the experiment, and they're pretty funny. They look like very old cartoons. They had a guy dangling from the ceiling and wearing flippers, and they were dangling him so that he was just above the surface of a tank of water. And you can see he's running furiously trying to stay on top of the water. It's memorable.
Okay. Well, I'm here in Canada, so we have to get the Canadian angle in here. So I understand a couple of prizes have a Canadian, at least partial win, and one is the archaeology prize.
Yeah, that went to two scientists who did an experiment. They were trying to figure out what happens when an animal, that could be a person, eats another animal. What happens to the bones? They were wondering because archaeologists who study very old things often have only bones and pieces of bones to go by. And they look at these bones and they construct a story out of, oh, well, you know, these big bones obviously were the person, and these little bones next to it, which were from a small animal, obviously were eaten by the person. But these two scientists wanted to test whether what everybody was assuming was true. They wanted to know if you eat the bones of something, do those bones in fact pass all the way through your body and come out the other end, or does something happen to them? And in fact, what they found, they took a shrew, you know, it's a little animal about the size of a mouse. They parboiled it. In other words, they cooked it, but just barely. And then they separated into a small number of chunks and swallowed those whole without chewing them, being careful not to chew on the bones. And then they watched over the next few days about at the other end to see everything that came out. So they collected all the bones that came out, and they discovered that an awful lot of the bones, including some of the big ones, got dissolved inside the body.
Wow.
So what that said is that there may be an awful lot of things that archaeologists think they know about the past that are wrong because they were making assumptions about what gets dissolved in passing through a body and what does not. And some of those assumptions are not correct.
That sounds like the beginning of an episode of Criminal Minds. The other one, we have time for just one more, and that's, I'm going to ask for the Canadian one here, and that is the Probability Prize.
That was done by a group that's mostly based in Scotland. One of them spent part of her career in Canada early in her life. They did a bunch of experiments, and they discovered two related things. First, that the longer that a cow has been lying down, the more likely that cow will soon stand up. The second thing they discovered was that once a cow stands up, you cannot easily predict how soon that cow will lie down again.
Okay, that just sounds like the kind of study people with way too much time on their hands on a Saturday night in rural communities do.
Oh, it took a lot longer than one Saturday night. It took a long, long time to do this. These are all people who work at a veterinary college in Scotland near Edinburgh. What they were trying to figure out was when cows get sick, is there anything about their behavior that a farmer might be able to notice very early? rather than wait until the cow is so sick that you may not be able to do much about it. So they were trying to look at, is there anything about the pattern of how often it stands up and lies down or anything else? And what they discovered was, yeah, the pattern of standing up and lying down apparently changes a lot several days before the illness really becomes visible any other way.
It is always fascinating to hear what wins the Ig Nobel each year. And as I said earlier, people can go online and check on YouTube. They can see the entire ceremony as well. Does it ever surprise you each year what comes up?
It always surprises me. That's why I do this. That's why we choose the winners that we choose. They're the most surprising things in the world that we can find.
Well, it's always
I should probably finish up the way I usually do by saying the thing that I say at the end of every Ig Nobel ceremony. If you didn't win an Ig Nobel Prize this year, and especially if you did, better luck next year.
Well, Mark, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll look forward to talking to you for next year's award as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Peter. It's always a great thrill to talk to you.
Mark Abrams from the Annals of Improbable Research. They are the folks who put out the annual Ig Nobel Awards. You can find out more information by going to their website at www.improbable.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0217, and you'll find the links.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we have a return visit from Leland Gregory. His latest book, 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, we do indeed have lots more Stuff File news and an idiot of the day. Stick around on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Have you ever wished real life were more like a porno film? Well, be careful what you wish for, because scenarios that happen in porn movies just don't happen in real life, and maybe that's a good thing, based upon this story. A Florida woman is accused of stabbing her boyfriend in the eye after he refused to have sex with her and another woman. Police say a drunken Crystal King Woolfolk, who had been at Shake Your Booty Club, came home with a woman and had sex with her while her boyfriend slept. She then asked her boyfriend to have three-way sex with them, and when he refused, police say she became enraged. The boyfriend says after the woman left, that's when Crystal grabbed a knife and stabbed him, and the struggle ensued. He was able to wrestle away the knife, then call for a ride to a hospital. The woman, who faces a charge of attempted murder, told police she recalls grabbing the knife, but doesn't recall using it. Oh, I'm sure her boyfriend has total recall, though. I mean, it's in his mind's eye, because that basically is all he has left. You know, if I had to be stabbed, if there was a choice of body parts where something would be plunged into me, the eye is probably the last place on my list. I'm just saying. Yeah. Anyway, a 10-year-old girl in Hayward, California, woke up in the middle of the night bleeding and in pain. Her parents said she was probably just having her first period, and their family doctor agreed, so they cleaned her up and sent her back to bed. By morning, she was still in pain and still bleeding, and only then did her parents notice that her bed had bullet holes in it. They did a full body inspection of the girl and found a bullet wound in her buttocks. There had been a drive-by overnight shooting, and the house was hit multiple times. They called 911, and sure enough, a bullet was lodged in the pelvic area, according to police. Okay, that story just really creeps me out. I mean, when you live in an area where the sound of multiple gunfire at night doesn't lead to clues that maybe a shooting took place, it's time to move. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it was kind of an unusual circumstance, said Major Shannon Clark of the Tulsa County, Oklahoma Sheriff's Office. The incident began when Joshua Snow saw someone burgling his car outside his house. Now, he grabbed his gun and ran out wearing nothing but his boxers to confront the thieves. That's kind of where things get a little gray, Clark says. Apparently, in the process of chasing off the burglars, Snow knocked on neighbor Jimmy Null's front door. Seeing an armed man in his underwear on his doorstep, Null reached for a shotgun. I guess just in the hype of everything taking place, when the guy reached for his own gun, Snow fired a shot trying to protect himself and his family, Clark said. No charges have been filed in this case, and the burglars escaped. When someone stands their ground against someone standing their ground, who wins? And once again, if everybody in your neighborhood is armed to the point where they can come out and shoot off rounds while they're in their underwear and no one gets arrested, perhaps it's time to move. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Leland Gregory, who has written such gems as S is for Stupid and Stupid Ancient History, has a new title out that seems to be right for the times. It's called 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex. Leland joins us on the line via Skype-to-Skype communications from Nashville, Tennessee, right now. Hi, Leland.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? It's good to talk to you again, man.
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So, like I said in the introduction, so timely. When the book 50 Shades of Grey came out, did a light bulb go off for you, like, immediately?
Well, my nausea level rose immediately. And then I thought, how can I cash in on this puppy? And that's how I came up with 50 Shades of Dumb. I thought, someone's going to do it. And actually, 50 Shades of Dumb is not really a parody, because I couldn't stomach the thought of actually reading the book enough to write a parody of it. So it's my take, my humorous nonfiction. These are all legitimate stories culled from newspapers, magazines, websites, all vetted, all legitimate, and all doing with crazy, stupid, screwy sex.
We should mention, as you just said, it's all true stuff in your book, as is the case with your previous books, S is for yep. Stupid, Stupid Ancient History, and the list goes on and on and on. So you just take basically what this show does, and that is find weird news stories and put them in a group together, only you do it in book form.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how I do it. I categorize it. I've got a database of probably, it's got to be around 120,000 pages now, where I cull from websites, people send me stuff, I get links to things, and I just stick them all in a big database. And then when I get a brain idea, I was going to say a different word there, a brain bubble How's that?
That works, yeah.
About categorizing, and then I just go do like a global search, and I go through all the database, and I try to dig up all the stories, and I put them together. I pull out maybe 250, 260 stories, and then from there I cull them down to about 220 and write the book based on whatever category I choose or my publisher says would be a good idea.
So how many books now have you done?
I have written 33 books.
Wow. And when you first started doing them, did you ever think, well, this is only going to run for a certain period of time because I've got to hit the bottom of the well at some point with this kind of book? Or are you surprised at how the stories just keep coming?
It's pretty amazing. And I attribute that to the fact that stupid people breed. And so there's always going to be the next generation of stupidity coming down the pike really soon. Because a lot of times these stupid people breed when they're really young. But I wrote my first book in 95, and I really had no intention of this being a full-time gig, you know. And it hit the New York Times bestseller list and stayed on for 17 weeks. It peaked at number 4. We actually outsold The Pope, which was pretty awesome. And I really never thought of it as a career. And then after a while, I thought, you know, this worked the first time. Let's see what happens. And then I was off and running and haven't stopped since 1995.
Okay, so back in 95, people did have the internet, but it's not the explosion of the internet that it is today. Does today's technology make it a little easier for you to collect the kind of stories that you put together in your books than it did back in 95?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember in 95, 96, 97, when I wrote 3 books. I wrote Great Government Goofs, Presumed Ignorant, and Presidential Indiscretions. And in order to do the majority of the research on those, I was living in Chicago. I would go outside, get on the bus, go down to the Harold Washington Library, find whatever materials I could find on the subject, take them to their Xerox machine, Xerox them, take them back home, and type them in. And I don't have to do that anymore.
Well,
because since I've been doing it for so long, like I say, I do research every week. Even if I don't have a book planned, I do research every week. It's just a habit now, and I just copy the stories, throw them in my database, and don't even worry about categorizing them until I get an idea for a specific. A specific category of stories, like people in love or people having sex or people in the government, which might be my next book again now because of this whole debacle that's going on down here.
Okay, well, let's talk about the current book now, which, as you mentioned, is 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex. So some of the things you have in this book, there are actually people out there who are exchanging oral sex for chicken McNuggets?
Yes, sir. They exchange sex for just about anything. And I'm not. It's going to be difficult to couch all these words that are rolling around in my head.
I'm just trying to figure out what sauce they asked for.
Why, it's barbecue.
Okay, good.
Something tangy, I guess.
Sweet and sour.
Sweet and sour. There you go. Right on. Good job. Tartar sauce. Yuck. It was a lot of fun to work on this book in particular because people do the craziest things with their nether regions or in the name of lust.
Yeah, I only touched on the McNuggets thing, but I understand in that headline and that grouping you have sex with teddy bears, sexually harassing dogs, pumpkins.
Pumpkins. That's one of my favorite stories. The story is that... there was a disturbance call that to the local police that there was a man in the pumpkin field, how should we say this, carving a pumpkin in a very unique way, making his own jack-o'-lantern, if you will. And so the police found him, you know, basically with his pants down and arrested him. And my joke at the end was the guy looked up and looked at the officer and said, "What is it, midnight already?" Wouldn't that have been great if he actually had said that? But
or yelled, "Oh my gourd."
You've been saving that one, haven't you?
No, not at all.
I need to call you next time I write a book for punchlines. I like those.
So what are the other things? I mean, you know, it's like when I do the Stuff File program every week, I read these stories, and sometimes I just, you know, put other stories away because some of them you just can't believe, even though you know they're true, but they're just really out there. What are the ones that make you, at least for this book, shake your head the most that you can share on a family show?
Oh, it's got to be the ones where people have sex outside their species. Those are the ones that make me go, come on, you know. And there's plenty of those. And people have, you know, since time immemorial, especially men, I would probably assume, kind of enjoy sticking their wick into just about anything they can, with anything with or without a pulse. But I love it when they get caught and then try to come up with like explanations.
And what are some of the things, again, that you can possibly share with us on this program, short of bringing back Catherine the Great?
Okay. I can say that every year there's at least 1,000 ER visits for people who have gotten hurt trying to have unusual sex.
Hmm.
Different positions don't always work.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh, there's just so. I had one, an English woman, very prim and proper English woman, heard a knocking noise in her house and called the police, or, you know, the bobbies or whatever they call them over there. And cops came and started searching her house, and they located the source of the noise, which was actually in her nightstand. And it was a little toy that had somehow gotten turned on and was banging up against the wall.
Oh, you mean one of those neck massagers?
Yeah, those were the personal massagers.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it was. So that was an interesting one. Of course, a lot of those personal massagers, people forget about those when they take them on planes.
Mm.
And when they pass through the scanner, people get a little embarrassed about that. It's just, but you know what? It's nothing new. People have been doing crazy things in the spirit of getting their jollies probably since we crawled out of the sludge.
Well, let me ask you this. Will someone who reads this book, 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex, will it make them more inhibited or give them ideas?
It is a how-to book. And it's actually a how not to book, how not to get caught. I mean, there's stories of, gee, Peter, it's just kind of hard to explain some of the stories in this book for a family friendly radio show. But I did have people like to, let's see, how would be the pleasant way of inserting objects into themselves.
You can always go clinical.
Okay. Yes. Inserting objects into themselves for pleasure. And had one great story where a gentleman was able to screw in a 60-watt light bulb.
Did it go on?
No, but it looked like his colon had a great idea when they did the x-ray.
one of the problems... with books nowadays, I find, I mean, I love my Kindle. I carry it with me wherever I go. But there's something to be said for being able to read your book in public and letting everybody else see the cover. The book.
It was fun writing it. But yeah, it is probably not a juvenile reader.
Okay.
Is that PC enough?
No Dick and Jane stories in there, huh?
Well, no Jane. No.
You see, I just lobbed them for you.
You just lobbed that softball right at me.
The book is called 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex. It's written by Leland Gregory. Leland, thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Thanks, man.
Leland Gregory, author of 50 Shades of Dumb, True Stories of Strange and Screwy Sex. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0217, and you'll find links to Amazon.com where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Scaffolding isn't probably something you think a lot about, but if you're in construction, it can be essential to your job. And if you work up high on scaffolding, laws that protect you if you fall are important. That's why, at one time, many states had special scaffold laws to compensate injured workers if they fell. Over time, federal workers' compensation laws were enacted to provide those benefits, though, so states repealed their outdated scaffold laws. Except New York. Today, New York's one-of-a-kind scaffold law requires builders to not only buy workers' compensation insurance, but special insurance to protect itself from lawsuits under the outdated scaffold law. Let's be fair, I never thought I'd be talking here about scaffolding laws. But when I heard that New York City's school system could build 2 new schools every year with the money it spends on insurance for the outdated scaffold law, I thought it was a problem worth revealing. If you'd like to learn more about how this law costs taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed go to New York City, and our favorite cab driver, that'll be Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the beautiful, somewhat sunny streets of New York.
I want to talk about something that's not necessarily New York, but kind of New Jersey, and that is the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. What's been going on with all that's been going on there?
Wait a minute. Where is New Jersey, and what is it? Is that like another state?
It's where your two football teams play.
And what is the name of the Giants?
The Jets and the Giants.
Yeah, I know that, but what's the name of the Giants, the full name?
The name, the New York football team Giants, isn't it?
Thank you very much. Yet it's in this place called New Jersey. But anyway, I didn't make time for speaking to you today to break up your chain of thought, so I shall now resume with your question, having tweaked you. As a matter of fact, I don't think I'm even allowed to go to New Jersey. I have to have special visas and things. No, what's happening is that all those people who were subjected to having their houses destroyed because of Hurricane Sandy are not getting the money. The government's doing nothing for them. And in addition to that, the insurance companies are all trying to weasel out. And everybody figures what's going on. Now, one explanation is it's just human nature to cheat thy neighbor. Or maybe this. I have a unique feeling about this. During Katrina, when nothing was done for the people in New Orleans, everybody said it was because it was mainly black people and Bush hated black people. Well, that sounds somewhat logical, I guess. Well, I'm thinking that since in this instance it's mainly white people, maybe it's because Obama hates white people. So there you are, a possible theory, but who knows?
Oh, but then you'd have to dig deeper into a Freudian situation, and then you'd have to come up with the conclusion that Obama doesn't like his own mother.
Yeah, okay, we can try that one also. But the bottom line is, once again, the insurance companies are trying to screw everybody, and the government is doing nothing, and it's heartbreaking. And it also doesn't help the housing industry very much, because if these people would get their money from the insurance companies, they would turn around and have their houses built. So the entire greater New York City area has come to a grinding halt about an incident which occurred last year, or even, I should say, a year ago. And by the way, this is not Indonesia or Sri Lanka, so it can be fixed. Hmm.
Meanwhile, as a taxi driver, one of the things you always get to complain about is the traffic in your city as you try to navigate through the roads as a cabbie. How is that affected when the UN is in action?
It was absolutely terrible. Every year when they have their fall assembly meeting, it's just horrible. And it's not because of the diplomats. It really isn't. I mean, they're bad guys all the time, so they're not specially bad. The people who become bad are the New York City cops, the Secret Service, probably the CIA. the FBI, the NSA. In other words, all these federal freeloaders show up to be in New York to protect or to whatever they're supposed to do, and they're just plain mean. They yell and scream at the New York pedestrians for not, move it along, or for the cab drivers or the bus drivers for not driving properly, you know, they think, move it along. They are just unbelievably abusive. But the worst of the Secret Service, they are just, you know, they look like a bunch of young fellows with hearing problems because they all have their things in their ear and the sunglasses on their face. Having now said that, I guess I'll never get a job with the Secret Service. But it's agony. It's pure agony.
Mm. Now, one of the things that's great about New York City is there's a lot of museums one can go through. But I thought the museums were free entry.
Well, that's the point. You know, this all has popped up because somebody has filed a lawsuit against the Metropolitan Museum of Art saying that they shouldn't be charging people to come there, go there. Well, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is kind of run by a bunch of snobs, said, oh, no, we have permission from the city of New York to charge. And the judge, who must be one of the more brighter judges, said, oh, yeah, let me see the document. Well, that was, I think, about 3 months ago. They're still looking for the document. They can't find it. So what they're doing now is that if you were to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, they would ask you in a very loud voice, you are donating some money today, aren't you? That, by the way, is the same scam they're pulling at the World Trade Center Memorial. And how much will you be donating today? Which, unless you're a cool New York City cab driver or a cool talk show host, will immediately embarrass you into sticking your hand into your pocket. It's absolutely outrageous. And now this whole case has been kind of opened up. Attention is being given to all the museums that are tax-free, they're on the public dole and all of that, and yet they'll charge a family of five, let's say, mommy, daddy, and three kids, $125 to go into the museum. Isn't that sweet?
Well, you see, my response to their question, how much are you donating today, my response to that would be, don't you usually wear a mask when you're extorting?
Yeah, well, let me add very quickly, lest anybody there be saying these are wonderful museums and they need the public support. They have so much public support already in their tax abatements, no tax, government funding. You don't have to worry about it. I could just ask one question to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which would strike terror in their hearts, and that would be, could we do an audit to find out that all of the paintings and all of the sculpture that you're supposed to have in that museum is still there? I'm more than willing to embark on that itinerary if they're willing.
Wow. Meanwhile, I understand you have a story that actually deals with a real cat burglar.
Yes, that was a very good segue. Ladies and gentlemen, that was probably one of the best segues done in the history of radio. Lady goes into a cleaning store to pick up her laundry. She sees a mangy cat in the corner, cowering, terrible condition, horrible condition. So what she does is she just picks up the cat, like I guess any good New Yorker would do, goes out the door and goes straight to a vet's office. And she's going to probably have to pay, I don't know, $90 or something for the vet, a Manhattan vet anyway, to look at the cat. And the vet looks at the cat and says, this is in terrible condition, and we have to do this for it, and we have to do that for it, and somebody is mistreating it, and it's absolutely terrible. Well, she leaves the cat at the vet's place and goes home. A little while later, the police come, and she says, aha, they're here to arrest the owner of the store, you know, find out more information. No. They arrest her for stealing a cat, take it to the local precinct, and actually keep her in jail overnight for her crime. Now, I have to submit that the two cops that were involved in this and their precinct commander, and I guess everybody else in the station house, are the biggest bunch of idiots on the face of the earth. Of course, all charges have been dropped against her, and she's gotten somewhat of an apology, but I will tell you, she's about to become the richest cat burglar in New York City when she sues.
Hmm. Meanwhile, I know there's always a problem when it comes to schools. Truancy is a big issue, and there really is no excuse for not being in school, right?
Right. this is a terrible story, and I'll apologize right off the bat, but it's a story that everybody is talking about in New York City. Man gets a phone call from the school asking why his high school son hasn't been in the school for 3 months. The father is flabbergasted because his son, 3 months ago, drowned with the school on an outing to the Catskill Mountains. And the father is in the midst of suing the Board of Education and the school for negligence. So for them to make that call to him from the school shows how unbelievably irresponsible they are and how their minds must be in the seventh layer of clouds or something. Their defense, the school I'm talking about, is that he went into a lake that didn't have a lifeguard and he shouldn't have. Don't they know that that's exactly what children do? Children do bad things because they are children. There should have been somebody there to prevent him from going into the lake. So we'll see how it all evolves. But it is a number one piece of conversation right now. Mm.
And finally, you have a celebrity sighting for us, someone who we all know from outer space, basically.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you something. I see a lot of celebrities all the time, and it, sometimes it's kind of discombobulating because you're seeing them in regular civilian clothes, and they're known to you in a certain part. And for a moment, you think that you're not seeing the actor, but you're seeing the person he plays. And I'm talking about Patrick Stewart. Now, I've never seen Patrick Stewart before on the streets of New York, and this was the first time. Actually, it was in Brooklyn. But it was just, like, so weird to be looking at the captain, you know? And, I mean, I didn't say anything to him because I think it's rude to go over and bother these people, you know, sort of like beam me up or something, except that wasn't him. That was the former captain. But, I mean, it really was weird. Anyway, he was just, I guess, with some friends at the Brooklyn Academy of Music going to that new opera or musical, Nicole, you know, you're the master of trivia.
Anna Nicole?
Yes. Mm. To play.
Cool. Did you see him with his new bride? You know,
I mean, I'm not as up to date on that kind of stuff. So he was with a rather attractive lady who had a misshapen head. No, I'm only kidding. I guess that was it. Yeah, I mean, logic, you just answered the question I never asked. That's why you're a talk show host and I'm a cab driver.
Well, there you go. You know, they were first spotted together back in 2009 at a party for Waiting for Godot in New York City, by the way.
I'm sure he lives here.
Yeah, and
I mean, he has an apartment.
They actually met in 2008 when he was in a production of Macbeth on Broadway.
Yeah, everybody who's anybody, I mean, you're about the only personality that doesn't have an apartment in New York, so you better take care of that.
Well, my grandmother used to have an apartment in Brooklyn. Does that count?
Yeah, it counts because, boy, you should have kept it.
Oh, God, okay? Yes. Yes.
Your grandma was probably paying $40 a month. And based on our rent control, rent stabilization, you could probably sublet it now for like $4,000 a week.
Wow. Anyway, sir, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. People can check out your website, which is www.gabby.com. They can also send you an email, peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Slidell, Louisiana police lieutenant suffered minor injuries after a man suspected of shooting up heroin while driving crashed into the back of the police cruiser he was in. The officer was monitoring traffic and was parked on the shoulder when he noticed a 2004 Lincoln LS veer off the road and head straight for his car. The driver of the Lincoln was 32-year-old Ronald Caplina. He was driving at about 40 miles per hour when he crashed into the officer. The impact pushed the police vehicle several feet, causing minor injuries to both. Slidell police tried asking Caplina why he was distracted, but he could not give them a clear answer. Police discovered a fresh syringe along with suspected heroin inside the vehicle. The syringe had dried blood on the needle, and Caplina had fresh injection marks on his arm. Police believe Coplina was distracted because he was injecting heroin at the time of the crash. He was cited for careless operation of a vehicle, driving under suspension, and no seatbelt. He was also booked on possession of a Schedule 1 narcotic and possession of drug paraphernalia. Now, in a world where everybody knows you're not supposed to drink or text while driving, why would you think it's a good idea to shoot heroin at 40 miles per hour? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0217. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0217. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it for this week's show. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.